What's up, Dog Pound? Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm. Welcome to our live looking at day two of Browns training camp here in Berea. The players, as you see, going through their kind of individual warm-up drills, getting ready to get after it. Yesterday, day one, we will dissect that. We'll also tell you what to look for here today in day two, Matt. But as a player, you come back after a long break. You have day one of training camp. You go through the paces. How are you feeling when you come out here for day two?
You're feeling a heck of a lot better than you did yesterday. Your legs are underneath you. The template for training camp has been created and shown to you by your position coaches and Mike Pettine, and you're out here today really trying to get better. Yesterday was full-on acclimation. I could see looking at the offense, it was very elementary. Today, it's going to be another step forward, probably into that second week of OTAs and maybe a little of what they did in minicamp. So it's the evolution of creating this team and actually what it's going to look like, because come tomorrow, the pads come on, and it gets real.
Absolutely, it does get real. Feel free to submit your questions to us on Twitter, to the Browns Twitter account, at Browns, of course, and we'll answer some of those questions throughout the show here. Again, Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm. I got the bucket hat going. It's very hot out here. The sun's out here. You want to protect yourself, and I don't have a luscious head of hair like yourself.
You don't. That's definitely true.
It is true.
You know what? I've been blessed, and I choose not to wear a hat when I'm on television.
Well, you know, why would you mess that up? It's too good. So yesterday, what stood out to you, and what did you really take away as you sat with it yesterday, went home, and thought about what you saw?
You know, as we talked about on Cleveland Browns Daily yesterday,
driven by Liberty Ford,
the energy and purpose that I thought I saw it, and Mike Pettine in his press conference reiterated that the guys were ready. It was all business. They are going to put a lot of the talking that a lot of people have done last year about what this team could have done but were unable to finish, they're going to come out and do that same thing. They need to come out fast. This schedule is very much in their favor at the beginning of the season, prior to that trip out to San Diego, that West Coast trip that we hope they're prepared for. But it's business. Every day is a work day, and it's those small building blocks. As cliche as it sounds, coaches are still pitching that. Small building blocks towards something bigger, that big goal of being ready to take the show on the road to MetLife Stadium.
Yeah, and you take a look at the wide receivers going through their drills, getting ready today. One wide receiver in particular is going to get a lot of attention, and it's because he's never played wide receiver before. Terrell Pryor went to your alma mater, the Ohio State University. I thought looked good, caught both targets in the 11-on-11 team portions. You just see his size stands out amongst these receivers. What do you think of Terrell Pryor in day one?
Gosh, I mean, he's been impressive. Mike, to reference Mike Pettine's presser again, he goes, boy, does he look the part, and he really does. I can't wait to see him in shoulder pads, you know, running routes out there. And not only was he more well-polished than I expected day one out here on Cleveland Browns practice field, but I thought that the way he stood in front of the podium and was confident talking about the position change, it was great. And even just said, you know, hey, I'll take on anybody, you know, on that deep ball with it in the air, because he's so confident in his ability and his size to go out and make those plays. It was such a great day that even, you know, after the practice, Josh McCown came over, spent a little time with him, and the one player that he pointed out was how impressive Terrell Pryor looked day one at wide receiver.
Yeah, what I loved is he stayed after practice, worked on his skills as a receiver, catching passes, working on going to his right, going to his left. And you see the drill here, he's about to go up in one more. That's working on high pointing the ball with the defender right in your hip pocket. That's where he has his biggest advantage. You look, 6'6", oh, a little too tall from Coach Joker Phillips there. 6'6", though, and you can see how massive he was. He was going against Robert Nelson, who played very well when he was an undrafted free agent last year out of Arizona State. He's competing, I think, for the 6th cornerback spot this year. He just didn't have a chance on the back shoulder throw to a guy when you're giving up half a foot. You really don't have a chance, and that's what the Browns need at wide receiver, and hopefully Terrell Pryor can bring if he can develop.
Absolutely, and I think the role where if I had to kind of pigeonhole what Terrell Pryor is going to play for us, it'll of course add the ability to have a second quarterback on the football field with the ability to throw, so for trick plays, but that's going to be few and far between. But down in the red zone, you know, those Calvin Johnson, where is he best? Where was Tony Gonzalez best? You know, going up, catching that ball, and you know, the back of the end zone, higher than the DB, higher than any safety, and making that play, bringing that football down. And that's where I think a guy of that size and stature, where a guy like Rodney Smith competing for that same spot, that's what he did well. And so you look at those two as big physical wide receivers, learning from Dwayne Bowe, who's been a bigger receiver most of his career, catching the ball in traffic. They're competing for that same spot, and I believe that role down in the red zone.
Absolutely. And, you know, the wide receivers here, they're going to get a good education going against what I think is arguably the best group of cornerbacks in the National Football League. You take a look at our defensive backs out there. I think Joe Hayden, we know what we've got in him. Two-time Pro Bowler, Lockdown Joe. The guy that jumped out at me yesterday, because I think he was just kind of not necessarily going through the pace, but he didn't get a full workload certainly in the offseason, is your former teammate Tremont Williams from the Green Bay Packers. That guy can ball. He was everywhere yesterday. And when you think about a team coming in to face the Browns, we saw so many people go away from Joe Hayden. I love the idea of teams trying to go at Tremont Williams.
Absolutely, and this plays right into Mike Pettine's system. What we've seen at his stops in New York, we've seen it at his time in Baltimore, and of course in Buffalo, that ability to play man press coverage in both of these guys. Now you're getting two number one quarters, but one of them, of course, will be covering the latter or the second wide receiver for most of these teams. Tremont Williams is very durable. He's got great experience. We've heard from Charles Gaines up in the Dog Bowl before, talking about the amount of knowledge that he brings to that room. And Coach Halfley has mentioned that, you know, sometimes they go to him to answer questions about coverages, situations, or techniques of what to properly play out on the football field. So he's not only going to be a leader a lot like Josh McCown, but he is still very much in his prime.
Yes.
Just a little overpaid for the Green Bay Packers, but a luxury to come here to Cleveland opposite Joe Hayden.
Oh, it's great. He comes here opposite Joe Hayden. What I'd say about him, sinewy strength. He doesn't look like a big guy, but you could tell how physical he was yesterday with the corners, and I can't wait to see him with the pads on going against a guy like Dwayne Bowe. I thought they had some good battles yesterday.
Absolutely, and to your point, that's the one thing that I'm looking for tomorrow and Sunday with Terrell Pryor, to just take a step backwards, is if he can get off the press and get into his route, he has a great opportunity to make this football team. If he struggles because of his size, because of the position change, to get off that press and get into his route, he cannot play wide receiver in the National
Football League. That with some big receivers. Remember Mike Williams, so productive at USC, comes to the NFL, isn't able to produce. This cornerback room, let's just lay it out for you real quickly here. Joe Hayden, Tremont Williams, those are your guys. They're going to be your starters. Kaywan in the slot. Gilbert, Dazier, they're going to make it. The battle's really going to be after that. You got Charles Gaines, Johnson Batamosi, more of a specialist, but he's playing cornerback now. Robert Nelson, who I talked about. Kendall James is a guy they like as well. When you talk about getting this passing game going, it's good. You're going against the team that allowed the lowest quarterback rating to quarterbacks in the National Football League last year, the Browns. So for Josh McCown, Johnny Manziel, Connor Shaw, Thad Lewis, they know they have their work cut out for them. I thought Josh McCown sharp yesterday, 9 of 11 in the 7-on-7 and team portions of the practice. He has a little bit of mobility in the pocket. He can slide around, make plays. Thought he did a good job with blitz recognition. I want to see some more shots down the field today, and I think we'll see that as camp opens up. But Josh McCown, what stands out the most, he is the leader of this team on offense. Before the drills, he's going over, he's talking to the guys on defense, he's talking to the guys on offense. People respect him, and I think his play is backing that up.
It definitely does, and one great thing about this organization is the ability to enter training camp without a quarterback quandary. Yes, we have Johnny Manziel, and everybody wants to know what they're getting out of him, but Josh McCown, as of right now, throughout training camp, is going to look to continue to solidify and grow within this offense, grow in his relationship with those wide receivers, build trust in those offensive linemen so that he can go out and do what we expect him to do. He does not have to be a franchise quarterback. That is not our expectation of him. That is not the template that the Cleveland Browns want to win football games doing. He needs to be controlled. He needs to be, play within himself. He'll take chances, and I think John DeFilippo, as time goes on, will build confidence in each other to take chances down the football field. But he can't get reckless. When we get reckless at quarterback, that is the demise of this football team.
Johnny Manziel yesterday, I'd call it a mixed bag. He had one real rough series, got sacked a couple times, almost got picked, had a ball batted at the line of scrimmage. Bounced back with some good throws in the following one, including a nice 20-yard, I call flag route to Kevin Cohn, and a nice sort of Vince Mealy that was dropped. But what did you think of Johnny Manziel yesterday?
Johnny Manziel looked like it was a feet-wetting type of day for him. You know, he had been working with John Gruden, as we have heard through many sources throughout this offseason. Of course, he was learning the John DeFilippo system in OTAs and minicamp, and I thought it looked like a first day for Johnny Manziel. So I look for him to have evaluated that film, to take that step forward, as I mentioned, not only for him but for this entire team, and to really grasp and play with confidence, because the one thing when it comes to Johnny Manziel, he's been so successful winning that Heisman and so productive at Texas A&M, drafted number one overall. There are expectations on him, pressure on him, but none more than the pressure he puts on himself. Wants to be perfect, and when it doesn't come easy out on the football field, you can get frustrated because the National Football League, you know, will humble you very quickly, and I think it has for Johnny Manziel. Can he overcome that and put one step in front of the other and build off of a good solid practice and turn one into two, two into four, and create an overall good camp for him?
If the Browns are going to go with three quarterbacks, obviously, Connor Shaw, Thad Lewis, that's going to be the battle, but the guys, Connor Shaw, I want to say, looked sharp yesterday. Mentally, he's right where he needs to be. He always knows where to go with the football. Two guys who stood out to me yesterday were among the linebackers. That would be Scott Solomon and Nate Orchard, two of the young edge rushers on this team. And I'll tell you what, I was impressed with the physicality. But again, we got to see it with pads on. We can't get too excited right now. But I think when Scott Solomon and Nate Orchard are on there, you try to run to the edge, they set the edge. Scott Solomon threw Joe Thomas back about 8 yards like he was on skates on one of those toss plays.
Absolutely. The great thing about both Scott Solomon and Nate Orchard, Scott Solomon, this is his first time playing in a 3-4 defense, having played, you know, that 4-3 defensive end in other places. He's coming in, he's a blank slate. So when he gets with Coach Fleury, you know, and they're teaching him these techniques, he's learning a lot of them for the first time, so he's able to perfect them for the first time. And they're really able to mold him like a piece of clay, along with his tenacity and the physicality that he plays with, will make him a great, impactful outside linebacker. And Nate Orchard the same. Yes, he was kind of up and down at Utah, predominantly with his hand on the ground, but again, blank slate as a rookie, learning this defense for the first time, whereas Mingo has learned a defense, lost that defense, learned it again last year, played with one shoulder. So we're going to continue to tweak him. Paul Kruger has been part of a different system. And, you know, up in the Dog Bowl, we've heard him say that he wants to evolve as a linebacker. And it was good to see. There were a few times where Kruger was in coverage and my eyes were drawn to him because not only the locks blowing in the wind, but I want to see his body control, having to come up and make a play in space on a running back, on a tight end, as a drop down by the quarterback late in the down.
Yeah, we think right now on the outside it's going to be Kruger, Mingo, Solomon, and Orchard making this team. The inside linebackers, that's kind of the heart and soul of your defense. That's where you got Carlos Dansby, Craig Robertson, of course, Christian Kirksey, who was on CBD with us yesterday. If you missed that, you can listen to that full interview at ClevelandBrowns.com or on the Browns mobile app. I'd go out of your way to check it out. I think those three, you got three starters for two positions. Obviously, Dansby's going to be your Mike linebacker. Last year, Robertson and Kirksey alternated at the will, depending on the packages. I'm expecting big things out of Christian Kirksey this year.
I definitely am, and I think that as we heard from him yesterday on CBD, he wants to be a three-down linebacker. Is that going to happen this year? I don't necessarily know, because I know what Craig Robertson did last year. He will look to grow in his role as well. But the one thing that we know that is definitive is we're going to have Carlos Dansby healthy. He's going to be the leader. He's going to be the voice of this defense along with Dante Whitner, and he will solidify his role. And I think if both of those young men, Robertson and Christian Kirksey, become very comfortable playing those dual roles and buying in to playing, you know, 30 to 40 snaps a game and balling out in that, their production will grow. I don't necessarily think that we need, you know, one guy for each spot. I have no problem with that rotation. And as we've mentioned time and time again on CBD, as this roster continues to be more difficult to make because of the competition that we've added with free agents and 12 picks via the draft and undrafted free agents, is this could be a position that you only carry three backers. So you'd have Carlos Dansby, Christian Kirksey, and Craig Robertson, where it'd leave a Tank Carter outside looking in if you want to be heavy at offensive line, defensive line. So Tank Carter, who Mike Pettine, you know, went out of his way, singled out and said had the best defensive offseason, will look to continue to grow in his role on defense if he can solidify that. And I think a lot of it has to do with him in blitz packages. They like him, you know, running in there like a bull in a china shop, allowing their playmakers to make plays. But he has to be great on special teams, which is why he's made this team time and time again.
Yeah, remember, he had the big punt block that set up that epic comeback in Tennessee last year, largest road comeback in NFL history. That fourth inside backer spot, Tank Carter, probably the favorite right now.
Yes.
You've also got Darius Eubanks, who had a shoulder injury last year, former safety at Georgia Southern, now coming in playing inside backer. Very good in coverage. And then Hayes Pollard, who you drafted out of the University of Southern California this season. Those three guys competing for that one spot. And I think, you know, you could see Pollard end up on the practice squad
if that's
the way that they decide to end up going with it. This defense, though, is going to be the heart and soul of this team. We've talked about the corners. We've talked about the linebackers. The position that I think is going to be the toughest for Ray Farmer and company to decide on is the defensive line. I think it is going to be almost impossible to narrow down who you're going to keep on this team. And what stood out yesterday to me was that when they went to the second team offensive line had no answer for that second team defensive line, which is really a first team defensive line.
And it may in fact have been why we, you know, some people could have been so critical on Johnny Manziel. Johnny Manziel is out there, you know, playing with a second offensive line, and we can't change who makes up that second offensive line. But when you look at the second defensive line, a lot of those same guys rotated as starters last football season, yeah, are looking to rotate as starters in this football season in certain packages. And you have guys playing their hardest trying to fight to make this roster because, as you just mentioned, the defensive line is going to be one of the deepest, most talented groups, but it's a numbers game. The NFL will always be numbers game, and you're going to have to fight to make that roster. And that's where the push and pull that Ray Farmer and Mike Pettine have to do based around the talent they have on this roster to make this football team.
And we'll get more into the defensive line as the show goes on. But one of the great things about training camp, it's an opportunity for the fans, the Dog Pound, to come out here to Berea, get right up close and personal with the players. And talk about that from a player standpoint. Was that always a special time for you to get to have those interactions with the fans at training camp?
It definitely was. And, you know, the time period right now, these the warm-up session, the individual sessions that you have with your group, especially with the lines being so long with so many guys on the roster, you know, when you run back towards the sideline and there's a fan there that knows your name, you have those little, you know, little quick conversations with them. All you're doing is growing in relationship with an amazing fan base. This is already an amazing fan base, but the opportunity to do something like this, and as I mentioned, to have a talk to an opportunity to talk to a few of the friends that I do have on the team, talk to Brian Hartline. He raved about this setup here, you know, in Berea for training camp.
So it was like the Taj Mahal.
He's like, it's like the Taj Mahal of training camp compared to what Miami. Miami'd have like a small little tent like we have above us, you know, for their friends and family with a bucket of water. You know, they're getting ice cream and snacks and pop and food and so on and so forth. Friends of mine also came to camp, and they were like, we didn't even watch practice because we were just enthralled with everything else going on at training camp. So it's a great setup and something the fans should definitely come out and see.
And you can adopt a dog right now, so go over there and do it. It's great. They got some adorable puppies
over
there. It's hard to walk away without one of those. So, yeah, great time. We talked about the defensive line a second ago. Let's get back to it. Right now, Danny Shelton, yesterday we saw him, big, massive physical presence. You think ultimately when it's all said and done, you're going to end up starting Randy Starks, Shelton, and probably Desmond Bryant, who I think is looking very good, is in better shape than I've ever seen him in. Then on that second wave, you got Phil Taylor, you got John Hughes, who just signed the contract extension, and Xavier Cooper, who yesterday showed that first step. He was in the backfield quite a bit. Then you've got, on your third wave, you've got Billy Winn,
yes,
who was in the backfield all day, who's in the best shape of his life. He's in a contract year, and I think he knows that a little extra motivation,
yes,
as you know about that for NFL players. Ishmaili Kitchen, who's been here for a while, and of course, Armonte Bryant, who's back. And I wouldn't even call him a third stringer because he works whenever you get into a nickel situation. He's with that first team,
like a hybrid,
getting after the quarterback, a passer. But that's nine guys already on the D-line, not to mention Dylan Winn, an undrafted free agent they like.
And what do we say, nine guys for seven spots?
Mate, can you keep seven defensive linemen on a 3-4 defense?
You can. When you're as talented and deep as you are here, you need those. They are necessities. But as you mentioned, I think if you go back to the defensive line, the focus that I will look like, you know, speaking to Billy Winn the other day in the Dog Bowl, he mentioned, you know, Randy Starks is so great as a pass rusher. So I think, yes, Randy Starks will be a starter on first and second down, even some third down opportunities to rush the passer. But the guy that could flip into that role on first and second down when there is that predominant run tendency would be John Hughes. John Hughes was rewarded with, you know, the 4-year, I believe, around $14 million yep. contract this year, so he'll be a Brown for years to come. You want to get that guy a role because I thought what we saw of him last year was penetrating, disruptor, playing hard, you know, whether it was one rep or 15 reps. He was giving you his all, and that's what I like to see out of a defensive line, especially in a 3-4 defense, because when you're not just catching as a defensive lineman, the tendency is for those blockers to get up on those linebackers, your playmakers, Dansby, Robertson, Christian Kirksey as well.
Matt Wilhelms,
if you will. Exactly. But when you have a penetrator, a guy, you know, screwing up their schemes and messing up their blocks, that allows those linebackers to scrape free. So a John Hughes is a guy that's been rewarded with a contract that will definitely be on the field if he can stay healthy.
And I'll tell you what, I don't know if it's that bold of a call, but if the Browns are to make a trade prior to this season, I think it will be from that defensive line. Don't be surprised if Kansas City comes a call and following the injury to their great defensive lineman, Don Terry Poe. Got a Twitter question. You can tweet us. Use the hashtag DPRLive or use Live Looking at Browns. We got you. We'll get it to you. Here we go. From Dogs by Nature says, do you think the Browns have their regular season kicker in camp?
You know, we've asked that question time and time again on CBD, and I'd hope to say yes, only because these individuals have been here throughout OTAs and minicamp, and they've given these coaches a great look. But what always happens throughout training camp once those cuts start to happen is other teams who are carrying two might release a veteran of some sort
right.
that becomes eye candy to a team like the Cleveland Browns, who might not want to take a risk on two young kickers or one young kicker to carry the load. Because as we've seen, and we hope that changes, we do kick a lot of field goals. We have an ability to move the football, but eventually we stall out as an offense, and we kick a lot of field goals. So you want to have that guy, as we had at the end of the, Garrett Hartley was a guy who did not miss a kick, secured that role and played very well for us at the end of the season, but wasn't enough. They want to take a chance on these two young guys. So I want to say yes because they've been here so long, but the answer might be no because someone else might be released by another team that might be just a little bit more of a sexy choice for us.
I'm going to say I don't think the kicker is here. I think when you look at what this team did, that you go out and you get a veteran Pro Bowl punter in Andy Lee. You've turned over your whole special teams. Your long snapper is going to be new. Your punter is going to be new. Your kicker is going to be new if it is one of these two
right.
young guys. But I think you're looking at it and you're saying to yourself, so many tight games. That's the way we're expecting to play it. Kicker is going to be of primary importance. All right, another Twitter question comes to us from @TheCaringCrab. It's nice. If you're going to be a crab, you might as well be caring. Browns, will Tremont Williams be better than Buster Screen?
By far and away.
Yes.
And I think because of, first and foremost, his experience, his durability, his confidence, his swagger, all of which you need to be a successful corner in the National Football League. He's done it. He's proved it. And I thought, as we say all the time, he has covered teams' number one wide receivers throughout his time in Green Bay. He will be asked to cover the two or three wide receivers here that the Cleveland Browns will see all year long. So absolutely. And, Buster grew in his role, eventually leaving, to the New York Jets, taking that big free agent deal and getting paid there. But I thought at times, very up and down, inconsistent, and a lot of penalties, holding, pass interference, where you'll see those, out of corners because of the competitive nature. But I think Tremont Williams is so much more controlled and smooth as a corner opposite Joe Hayden.
Yeah, and he's got more size. Let's not forget what happened when he played Tampa last year. Mike Evans on Buster Screen. Tremont Williams, a taller, leaner, longer cornerback, and I think he is going to be very, very good for this team. I'm very excited about that acquisition. And one thing you got to come out to camp to see, the only place to see it, is our cornerbacks playing corner wearing boxing gloves. We saw that yesterday. Prevent the grabbing, prevent the holds, try to alleviate some of those penalties you were talking about. We got one into us now from Nick Rojas. He says, who are you most excited to see take the field in this first week of camp?
It might be the guy that we're going to have on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, Duke Johnson. His role. The whole running back group in general, Isaiah Crowell, Terrence West, Duke Johnson, what roles will they have? And especially Duke Johnson, who they wanted to go seek out and make plays. What role will he have on third down? Will he be that third down back? Will he be the scat back, motioning him out, motioning back into the backfield, potentially some wildcat situations to get the ball in his hands, force the defense's hand to defend where he lines up each and every time he steps on the field?
And we talked about Chris Kirksey, talked about it yesterday on CBD, that, he is a tough matchup when he gets flexed out there. I think you're going to see him utilize, like New England used a guy named Sugar Shane Vereen, or like the Cincinnati Bengals use Giovanni Bernard to complement their power runner, Jeremy Hill. The guy that I'm most excited to see, because I think he needs to be an impact player from day one, is Danny Shelton. I want to see Danny Shelton out here day in and day out wreaking havoc, and I can't wait to see the pads come on because I think that's where he'll really shine. And I just want to see him be a difference maker. When you are last in the league against the run, but you're one of the better pass defenses in the NFL, if you can shore up that run defense, it's going to allow you to get pressure, be more exotic. I think you've got the corners to back up an exotic blitz package. I want to see Danny Shelton come in and be that disruptor, eat up two guys, free up the playmakers, so we can stop the run.
Absolutely. Stopping the run, and it also plays into our favor, because you give our offense, which will have many questions swirling about it all year long because of the playmakers, because of the quarterback position, and so on and so forth, but it gives them more opportunities. When you stop the run and you're so great against the pass, what does that mean? You get off the football field and they're punting it back to your offense.
Yeah, it's going to help the offense. It's going to help time of possession.
Yes.
Think about it. When
you're
getting run and run,
game.
You control the football game. And with Andy Lee, you're trying to flip field position, and that's what I think the Browns are going to try to do. So, yes, Danny Shelton, critically important to this team. Christian Zylstra says, what are the odds, percentage, give me a percentage, the Terrell Pryor makes the 53-man roster as a wide receiver?
30%. We know it's an uphill battle for him. Terrell knows it's an uphill battle for him. I think it really boils down to how good and how fast he can evolve and not necessarily learn the nuances of route running or remembering his offense. I think the big struggle will be for him, and he's a huge target off the line. He looks a little bit more like a hybrid tight end. almost like Devin Funchess coming out this year out of the University of Michigan.
So to alleviate that, though, if you liked what you saw, you could use him kind of like a Marcus Colston as a slot, a
yes.
big slot.
Yeah, a big absolutely a big slot. But when you look at the depth of our wide receiver room, and we sought out Brian Hartline and sought out Dwayne Bowe, we have the emergence of Taylor Gabriel last year. We drafted Vince Maley. They need opportunities to grow as well. So Terrell knows he's up against the clock and the number of days that he has to prove himself, but his ability to get off a press and get up into his route will be the difference between him making the team and not.
This is what I think needs to happen. You said 30%. I'm going to go 40% just because why not? Just to be a little
optimism.
Ambitious. Yeah, I'm an optimistic guy. They call me Optimismo. So this is what needs to happen for Terrell Pryor to make team. He needs to show that he can play wide receiver at a high level. You need the team to carry two quarterbacks so he then becomes your emergency
Correct.
Third. I think that would help his cause. You need somebody to emerge on special teams as a gunner alongside Johnson Badamosi so that Marlon Moore doesn't become quite as important to this team. If Justin Gilbert can show that he could be an elite gunner on the outside, or one of these young corners, whether maybe a Pierre Desir can show he can be, if one of these guys can be an elite gunner on the outside, maybe it's a receiver, maybe it's Taylor Gabriel, maybe it's one of the running backs. Somebody can show that you don't necessarily need to have two guys who are purely specialists on this team. That could help them. And the other thing is an injury to a vet, maybe a Brian Hartline or
Absolutely.
Dwayne Bowe. Or if Brian Hartline doesn't impress, are you going to keep him around when you could have a 26-year-old who's 6'6 and runs a 4.3 40?
Absolutely. The one other thing that I'm going to have my eyes on is, does Chris Tabor build a role somehow, some way for Terrell Pryor on special teams? That would increase the percentage maybe up to 40 or 50 in my eyes. If I could see, picture him running down on a kickoff, being able to make a play, or being the personal protector or a wing on a punt on the punt team, playing some type of role in like in anything in life, the more you can do, the better. And I think Terrell has to prove that well beyond just playing wide receiver.
Well, we saw yesterday he got plenty of special team reps, so he is going to have to Good. Show some acumen in that aspect of the game. Which first-round rookies impressed you the most so far, Irving or Shelton?
It's got to be Danny Shelton. And I think it's because, Cam Irving was playing in a partial role with John Greco at right guard. And I just thought Danny Shelton walks around with the swagger, with the energy that, you know, we saw draft night when he hoisted Roger Goodell up into the air. And I think that he's the guy that we need an immediate impact on this football team. Because, yes, our offensive line was so good with Alex Mack healthy last year, which is why we drafted Cam Irving as an insurance policy. And he'll grow into his role potentially somewhere along that line. But Danny Shelton, to me, is the guy that we need immediate impact from. And I saw that from him yesterday.
In terms of who looks the best, I'll be honest. I think it's a little bit too early to tell. We want to see these guys in pads, especially at the lines.
Absolutely.
But it's got to be Danny Shelton.
It has to be Danny
this
Shelton.
This team's line can still be very good if you don't change anything from a year ago. If you go Joe Thomas, Joel Bitonio, Alex Mack, John Greco, Mitchell Schwartz, you can still be very good.
You can.
You need Danny Shelton.
You need
you
Danny Shelton.
You want Danny Shelton on
you
that
do.
Wall.
You absolutely
You need
do.
Him. All right, we got another Twitter question that comes in from Walter Triplett. Do you think we'll continue to have multiple formations on defense? Yes, yes, and yes. In fact, we saw yesterday situations where there were two defensive linemen. We saw three, we saw four. So I think it's pretty easy to see that Jim O'Neill likes to mix it up. And when you talk about going from last year to graduate level, it's going to get only more complex.
It definitely is. And I'm an advocate for that this year. I thought last year in a new system at times,
too much.
It worked against us. It was too much. We were good at a lot of things, but not great at anything. And in all the good football teams that I've been a part of, or when you watch, you know, football around the National Football League, there are go-to packages and go-to situations or players that you want on the football field. And I thought we rotated so heavy, especially at the defensive line. You know, as you mentioned, two guys, one guy, one standing up, two of them down. It was confusing for me as a defensive football player and a defensive, you know, veteran of 8 years in the National Football League that. And you want that confusing nature of your defense, but you don't want it to be confusing to your teammates.
I agree with that. Question now comes in, where do you think we have improved the most this offseason?
I believe continuity on offense. Because we went out and sought out the playmakers, and I believe that everyone on that offense has a role. I don't think there's no animosity on the offensive side of the ball. I think we have... You know, a plethora of backs in the backfield. We have a plethora of wide receivers that can actually make plays, you know, be a one receiver, a two receiver lineup in the slot. They're learning all those roles. And I know, again, yes, I'll be optimistic as well. I think the play as of right now, what I've seen out of the quarterback position, is better than it was at this point last year.
I think it's the defensive line. The only loss from the defensive line from a year ago is Ataba Rubin. He was banged up. He was not the player he used to be. And at times out there, he just couldn't get off the ball, couldn't get any push, and was getting pushed around. So he's gone. And who's in? Randy Starks, multiple-time Pro Bowler. Danny Shelton, your first-round pick. And Xavier Cooper, your third-round pick. Those three, adding this line, you get Phil Taylor back healthy. You get John Hughes back healthy. You get Armani Bryant back healthy. And it's a glorious thing. As my guy, the dancing robot, Ken Carman, who will be hosting Mike Pettine Show, the coach's show on the radio with me throughout the season on the Browns Radio Network, strolls by. That was a nice, good robot.
It was a great robot.
It was a good robot.
For a big guy.
Greg Bell says, what are your thoughts on Shane Wynn, the young, small wide receiver from Indiana who has just made his way into
camp? It's tough. For a guy like Shane Wynn,
can you have Andrew Hawkins, Gabriel, and Shane Wynn on the same team no matter how good he is?
No, you can't. And that's where, you know, I'd love to have a conversation with his agent and say, hey, you know, after what the Browns did in free agency and what they're returning and what they drafted, what made Cleveland the opportunity for Shane Wynn to come here? Because they have two of those personalities on this roster already. And you're going to say, as an undrafted free agent, that you're going to come in and be better than those two personalities? Just doesn't make a lot of sense. But we are all competitors. He might have saw a weak position group last year and thought that he would come in, and he saw the role that Andrew Hawkins and Taylor Gabriel played, you know, minus Brian Hartline and Dwayne Bowe, that he can fit that role and beat out some of the lower wide receivers on this roster.
Well, he could also be looking at the fact that, hey, if I can come in here and impress, land on the practice squad,
sure.
Andrew Hawkins' guaranteed money is up after this year. Perhaps he could come in and be a younger, cheaper slot option for this team as they go forward. I certainly hope to see Hawk here for a long, long time. However, let me make that perfectly clear. All right, another question came in to us. Who's going to see more time at running back? Terrence West, who took the first rep with the first team in team drills, or the Crow, Isaiah Crowell?
I believe it's going to be Isaiah Crowell. And I know that you're a huge advocate of Isaiah Crowell. As we have heard from John DeFilippo all offseason, we're going to pick up a lot of the same, you know, verbiage, a lot of the same techniques they use in that zone run scheme with the mix and match of the power run game using Malcolm Johnson, who would essentially play the role of a fullback in that scheme. And I thought Isaiah Crowell is a better fit for that. What I saw out of him, Terrence West is more of a slasher, a jukey type of back, which at times I thought danced a little too much in that zone run scheme. And I know that he worked all offseason to eradicate that as well. But I think, for me personally, I want to see Isaiah Crowell, as we've mentioned on Cleveland Browns Daily, continually 225-plus carries is what I want to see, because I think he becomes a 1,000-yard rusher.
You get him those carries, he's going to rush for 1,000 yards. Isaiah Crowell last year, top five in the NFL in terms of breakaway percentage. That's runs of 15 yards or more on his carries. He had 10 of those, about one every 15 carries last season. He looks more comfortable on his feet. He is definitely a better fit for the power run game. He's got to take care of the football. Yesterday, I know they were just little drills, but you got to take care of the football.
Yeah.
They all matter. If he takes care of the football, Isaiah Crowell will be the primary running back for this team, and I think he will have a very, very successful sophomore campaign. Our next question comes to us from Kid T. What team will present the biggest challenge on our schedule this season?
I think by far and away,
all of them
are going to be tough. I think our division as a whole will all be tough. So I would say our entire division will be a challenge. But the optimist that I am, I think we can split 3-3 because of the type of football team that we're developing right now behind us and what we've added this offseason, which will be encouraging for us in that playoff hunt. But you have to look at Seattle. You know, Russell Wilson was just rewarded with a four-year, $87 million deal, $60 million in guarantees, taking that trip out west, getting prepared, to play in the rain and the Legion of Boom and the 12th man and every scenario they've created. They've gone to two consecutive NFC championships for a reason. So they, to me, outside of our division, by far and away are big and bold as the toughest opponent for us this year.
Can't take any game lightly in the NFL. There's 16 opportunities to get a win, and that's what certainly the Browns are going to have to do. I think you got to come out and start fast.
Yes.
And then there's that schedule grouping where you go four straight games in the division.
Yes.
The fast start and those four games are going to be key to this season. Seattle, though, on paper, on the road against Seattle Seahawks, that is probably the toughest game on paper for the Cleveland Browns this season, no question. Welcome again to our live look in here. Browns training camp, Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here. The team going through some special teams drills before they get ready to get into the 7-on-7 and team portion of the drills. Let me ask you as a player, because for me, when I go through and then I watch the tape after every practice, I go through everything, but I pay significantly more attention to team.
You have to. And that's the buildup. That's why practices are structured the way they are. you know, you stretch to get warmed up, to get your body primed to go through a two-hour practice. You hit individual, as you said, Isaiah Crowell, you know, drop the ball in some of those individual settings. All of those drills essentially are predicated around putting you in situations that happen in team situations. So you go individual, you hone your skills as a position, and then you go group where you're with, you know, you might work linebackers and DBs, work together on their communication in some type of situations. Then you go group, you can go defensive line, outside linebackers to work some pass rush situation, communication there. Then you do 9-on-7, which is your run period, which will be very exciting tomorrow once the pads are on. You work on your run, and then you go 7-on-7, you work on your skeleton, your pass, and then you bring everything. Individual skills, group skills, 9-on-7, 7-on-7, and all those things are culminated, and you're getting a lot of the same play calls that you had already worked on in 9-on-7, 7-on-7. The same calls come again in team, and you have to master it and do it against live action.
So how hard is it? Who has the advantage in that situation? When the defense knows the routes that are coming or the offense knows the coverages that are being called, how does that actually work?
I think that if I know Jim O'Neill and I know that the defensive coaches that I've played for is the defense creates a script and submits that to the offense, and then the offense scripts in most cases for success. They go, okay, they're in man here, they're in three here, they're in quarters, they're in two. I want to see this against this. And everybody has their days where the offense may submit it first, so the defense can have their day to build and grow. But as I know, the defense is, and I know Jim O'Neill would want to put his defensive guys, especially in year two, in this situation to be with as much adversity as possible. We're going to tell you what we're running and give it to you. You just come out and run whatever you want, and we want to learn on the fly, because defense is all reaction.
And he wants to talk smack too, so we know he wants him to be successful.
Yes,
a guy who makes that defense successful, Tashaun Gibson, 6 interceptions a year ago, had the little contract issue mini camp, but now he's back, signed his restricted free agent tender, he's out there. How good can he be?
He can be great, and I think the more disruptive, the better we are against the run, only allows his opportunities to succeed, make those plays, gain those interceptions as we stop the run. The more we can put teams in 3rd-7+ only plays into the favor of our great defensive backfield and a ball hawk like Tashaun Gibson.
Absolutely. The team's starting to get into their 7-on-7 drills right now, kind of what you would call passing camp there, and you want to see a lot of success in those 7-on-7s. You saw it with Drew Brees and Phillip Rivers and, of course, Aaron Rodgers there. Will the Browns use a large amount of running backs this year or try and find one starter to carry the team? Ask Kenny Chapman. I think we talked about it. I think
we did.
I think they want to get one primary runner, Duke Johnson, to take carries as well, and then whoever isn't that primary runner will probably be a spellback. So I think it's going to be a committee, but in the sense of like the Patriots or the Bengals are a committee, there's one guy who they hope to have carry the mail.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if as we answered a kind of percentage question earlier, I would say you'd love to have one guy taking 60% of the carries, one guy taking 25 to 30, and just a sprinkling, which would be the Duke Johnson carries on the ground in the run game. But where the unique ability of Duke Johnson to win in the pass game and win in one-on-ones, bless you,
Thank you.
Truly where that role will be played.
Yes, I think that is the way they're going to get the backs there. Honestly, I think this team's going to be able to run the football. I think the line's going to be very good. It's going to come down to what they can do in the passing game to complement this defense.
Yes.
That's going to be the key. And so that's what I'm really going to be looking at. Another thing I'm going to be looking at is Justin Gilbert.
Yes.
Justin Gilbert was the 8th overall pick last year. Kind of a forgotten, wasted rookie season, you'll call it. Working with the second team right now opposite Pierre Desir behind Hayden and Tremont Williams. You want to see what he can do. And I think we need to see massive growth from him in year two.
Absolutely. I mean, Justin Gilbert, you didn't use the 8th overall pick and make the trades to acquire the picks to move back to get a guy, to seek out a guy. And they thought, and I believe in some cases, and Mike Pettine was enamored with Justin Gilbert because of what they thought they needed to play corner in this man press system. He just wasn't a pro. And I talk about it consistently, and I was like that early as a young player. I thought, hey, yeah, I'm in the NFL. This is great. Give me my money. I can just go out, roll my helmet out there, and be very talented. But the more I realized that it was a business, the more that the veterans kind of instilled that professionalism in me, it carried over to the practice field, which is what elongated my career, got me paid, and got me out on the football field.
For the people who don't necessarily understand at home, why don't you break this down for me? Because you see a Terrell Pryor. Oh, my God, this guy's an unbelievable athlete. How could he not make this team?
Sure.
Justin Gilbert's an unbelievable athlete. How is he not having success? How important is technique in the National Football League?
It's absolutely huge, and that's where, with Justin Gilbert's case, to talk about him, so many times he would revert back to that floating corner, which he was able to do at Oklahoma State, that, just his God-given ability. He was by far and away better than, most wide receivers in the Big 12. He could float, make plays. His break was faster. He was had better ball skills. But when you get to the NFL, everybody's great. You know, all of those individuals making significant amount of money, it's they have a family. They have houses and cars and boats and so on and so forth. And they want to maintain their career as long as they can. And everyone's goals are different. Is it team goals, winning Super Bowls? Is it, you know, Pro Bowls, taking them across the pond to Hawaii? Do they want to be a Hall of Famer? Everyone's goals are different. And in this case, for a guy like Justin Gilbert, it's simply doing enough to solidify his role for where this team drafted him 8th overall.
All right, Jay Rowland wants to know, who's going to lead this team in sacks this year?
I think it's going to be Paul Kruger again. I hope it's Paul Kruger. He showed a lot of promise last year, but when you do that, you also get a lot of attention by the teams as they watch last. You know, the Jets, the Raiders, the Tennessee won't have a lot to go off of, so they'll watch a lot of last year's film, and they'll see Paul Kruger get featured time and time again and be a disruptor. Not only did he have a lot of sacks, his quarterback knockdowns was great, his PBUs were, you know, his pass breakups, so on and so forth was great. So I think Paul Kruger's going to be that guy, but as I've mentioned, you know, time and again, because we talk about this every day on Cleveland Browns Daily, what I'd love to see opposite him, need a guy to emerge and have double digits across from him. That's best case scenario to get that out of, you know, Nate Orchard or Barkevious Mingo, but the committee opposite Paul Kruger to have 5 each, 6 each, 4 each, whatever it is. So there's a dual threat only plays into how great Paul Kruger can really be in this defense.
I agree with that. We want to thank you all for joining us here on our live look-in from Browns training camp. Don't forget to tune in to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, Matt and myself, at 1 o'clock today. Duke Johnson will be live in studio with
That'd
us today, the rookie from the U. Of course, we've got you covered at ClevelandBrowns.com and the Browns mobile app. We'll have the huddle breaking down training camp every day, the two-minute drill, great articles from senior staff writer Andrew Gribble, and of course, Kevin Jones, plus on Twitter, live updates constantly at ClevelandBrowns.com on the homepage. So we got you covered. Everything you need to know about Browns camp. Don't forget, tomorrow, the first day in pads for this football team. This will be the first of 3 live look-ins we'll have for you. We'll have another one Wednesday, August the 5th, and then the following Monday, August the 10th. So we'll give you 3 live look-ins throughout this training camp period. And this Sunday, we will have a live edition of Dog Pound Report live from training camp right here this Sunday at 11:30 a.m. on News Channel 5 WEWS, following, of course, the great Inside the Cleveland Browns. For Matt Wilhelm, I am Nathan Zagura saying thank you very much for joining us on this live look-in here on ClevelandBrowns.com, and we bark together, Dog Pound. Oh, yeah.